and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riespendel, and I'm your host on today's program. Well, it looks like Illinois joins 20 other states with a statewide cable franchise. I'll be talking a little bit about that and what that means for our cable TV environment and for some grassroots media. Also, pretty soon, the FCC is going to be auctioning off spectrum, wireless spectrum, that could be put to lots of uses. Chairman Martin of the FCC was in front of the House Subcommittee on Internet this past week, and we'll talk a bit about what's going on with that. And also, I'm going to talk a little bit about a new beta media player that lets you keep the videos you watch online and what that may mean for those of us down here at the grassroots. So do stay tuned here. We'll jump right into it. On July 3rd, Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich signed SB 678, a law which assigns franchising authority to the Illinois Commerce Commission for cable television. And this is something I've been talking about on Media Geek for well over a year now. And it's something which the telecommunications companies tried to do at a national level last year and failed, which was to make it so that local communities no longer, or municipalities no longer, have the ability to individually negotiate and set terms for new cable companies wishing to offer cable television services. Instead, there would be a standard either nationwide, which did not happen, or statewide, which has now happened in 21 states, including Illinois. And this bill passed the state Senate 54-0 and the state House 113-0 before being signed by Governor Blagojevich. Now, many consumer groups, especially groups active in public access, educational, and government TV channels, have been very wary of these state-level and national franchise agreements because the money and the funding which support these channels and which in the agreements which create their existence in the first place on cable TV systems comes from these individual local franchise agreements. This is the way that the cable industry has run going back more than 20 years and is what the incumbent cable operators like Comcast or Insight Communications had to deal with all this time. And it's something which the likes of AT&T and Verizon have not wanted to deal with, making complaints that they're being held back from offering competitive TV services as a result of these agreements, although many municipalities dispute that. What's interesting about the Illinois case is that, one, the bills passed unanimously without any opposition in either the Senate or the House. What's also a little bit unique is that consumer advocates and public education and government channel advocates were actually allowed to have some say in how this all went down. They were brought into negotiations of this bill, which has not generally happened in other states where such laws have passed. So, beginning immediately with the passage of this bill in Illinois, local communities no longer are responsible for negotiating new franchise agreements with cable companies. And that has all been passed to the Illinois Commerce Commission. It happens at the state level. And it'll be up to the Illinois Commerce Commission to set down the rules, specifically regarding things such as how much money is paid back to local municipalities for use of public rights of way. And what other sorts of concessions are given to local municipalities in exchange for allowing these new companies to come in, like AT&T. But also, this law was taken as an opportunity to put in new customer service rules and guidelines, something which also has not happened in other states. Some of these new rules include standards on the installation, repair, and telephone response time, on billing, on collections, and services for the disabled. For instance, companies must provide 30 days written notice prior to a change in rates, and that must be at least 28 days prior to the new rates being due in payment. Consumers have 21 days between notification of a disconnection, meaning that you're being told your service is being disconnected, and when the disconnection can take place. but if a consumer cancels service, that must be completed within 7 days. And of course, you quit being billed within 7 days. Now, the customer service rules do not begin until January 1 for incumbent providers. And the incumbent providers, of course, are companies like Comcast or Insight Cable, which are already offering service. The new rules will be implemented immediately upon any new entrants into the cable TV market. One of the nice things about this in particular is that a lot of concessions were given towards these PEG channels, as they're called, the public, educational, and government channels, something that has been largely left out of the debate in other states, in which was very much worried about the national level, that if these new entrants to cable markets like AT&T and Verizon were not required to provide public, educational, government channels, provide funding or provide space or provide carriage for them, that may eventually make them go away, because then the incumbent carrier cable channels would be saying, well, hey, why do we have to carry these channels if our competitors don't have to? And that would be just a matter of time before they went away. So in particular, the bill that was signed by Governor Blagojevich, SB 678, provides support for public, educational, and governmental channels at 1% of gross revenue above the 5%, with a match above that 1% for PEGs that currently receive more funding. So that means that there is a 5% amount that goes to these, and then 1% over that. It requires that statewide franchise holders cover the cost for carriage of PEG channels. That means that AT&T, in addition to possibly having to carry these channels, will cover the cost for the carriage of those channels. It also guarantees that PEG channels will be carried in the same format and with the same signal quality as commercial channels. That means that if a cable company starts carrying everything in high definition come the changeover 2009, your public access, education, and government channels must also be in high definition. It also means when we get into the digital realm with digital cable or with so-called IPTV, which something like Verizon or AT&T might be offering, you can give a certain level of bandwidth to the video, digital bandwidth, and to a large extent, how much bandwidth you supply determines the quality. So it might be a certain, you know, look like a certain resolution, but as you've noticed, internet video sometimes is very poor quality, sometimes it's very high quality. And this guarantees that if a particular amount of bandwidth is being dedicated to the local NBC affiliate, that same amount must be given to the PEG channels. There's also provision for establishing public, educational, and government channels in jurisdictions that currently have none, and for adding additional channels when needed. And I know that is something which has happened locally here, where MediaGeek is produced in Champaign-Urbana. There's been a lot of discussion about establishing a standalone public access channel. Currently, there is a public access channel that shares its channel space with a government channel in the city of Urbana, and there's been discussion about there being an independent single public access channel for both cities, and it looks as though this agreement, this new law, would provide provisions for that possibly happening. It also prevents the confiscation of PEG channels if programs are repeated. And this means that if your public access channel is repeating a lot of programs, or if there are programs that are appearing on multiple channels, that is not grounds for a cable company taking away channels. It also prevents a reduction in franchise fees due to a change in franchise fee definition. And this means that basically a municipality can count on the fees coming back to it to stay relatively stable, provided that the number of customers remains stable or grows. And finally, there's provision to protect against losing funds from current cable deals should cable operators opt into the statewide franchise. So currently, every cable company operating in Illinois has a local franchise agreement. This bill has provisions to make sure that if they choose to instead join the statewide franchise, that the local municipality doesn't lose funds in that process. So in a lot of ways, probably one of the most progressive looking of these laws that exists yet in the 21 states that has them. It does not mean that it is completely and utterly great, one or two of the things which it does not have, which many consumer groups and public interest advocates have criticized this particular bill for, is that there is no universal coverage provision. And a universal coverage provision would say that a new cable entrant would have to provide service to an entire area or entire portion of an area rather than simply cherry pick and serve only affluent neighborhoods or urban neighborhoods. Usually in franchise agreements with cable companies, there is some provision that the cable company not ignore parts of a given city or municipality, in particular, making sure that cable companies don't ignore poorer parts of town or provide them with lesser service than they do to more affluent areas of town. There's also no infrastructure upgrade requirements in this particular law. One of the big arguments that has been made by the telecommunications industry about why it needed a national franchise or why it needs state-level franchises is because they say they need both the funding and incentive to roll out infrastructure upgrades. Because the likes of AT&T and Verizon will be offering cable services, cable television services, over broadband internet lines, essentially the same sort of infrastructure they would offer broadband internet, they promised that with the ability to offer these new television services, they should also be able to offer better, faster internet services. But they need an incentive. They need the capital to go and build this out. Unfortunately, there's no requirement to do this. And there is precedent, because if we go back now more than 10 years to the Telecommunications Act of 1996, and during the period of time back then, there was a lot of discussion about regulations on the growing and very, at that point, very nascent internet provision industry and the telecommunications industry, and the likes of AT&T, or then Ameritech and SBC, went to many state houses and told the legislators that if they were not overburdened, as they said it, with needless regulations, that then they would be free to roll out higher speed services to home customers with very high speed data, which allow you to give high definition video over internet lines. And even then, back in 1996 and 1997, they were talking about speeds as fast as 100 megabits per second would be very close in the offering, perhaps as soon as 2000. Well, we all know we're now here in 2007, and if you have DSL or cable modem, you probably don't see download speeds much faster than a few megabits. Just to give you an idea, the video that's on a DVD, broadcast quality video, is 5.5 megabits a second or so. So currently, most of your broadband internet lines are not really capable of delivering DVD video, better yet, very high definition video of the type that is capable currently with broadcast television or with cable television. And so that rollout never really happened and didn't happen quickly, because outside of urban areas, very often you cannot get very much in the way of high-speed internet. It may not be able to even get speeds of nearly a megabit. Years ago, it didn't matter so much, but now that people are engaging in much more video, watching way more movies online, there is much more call for it. And right now, if you do download movies through Amazon.com or through the iTunes Music Store, you're still not yet even getting quality as good as a DVD that you could buy for $10 at the store over the internet. And that is because the speed just simply is not there yet. And so a lot of consumer advocates believe it would have been very nice to see some provisions in this law to require this build out and require upgrades and make sure that faster service would be coming to people's homes because of the further ability to more easily get cable put in on these same lines. Verizon, interestingly enough, was one company which is actually critical of this law, SB 678, creating the statewide cable TV franchise, saying that it believes that this law would not actually ease the entry of new players. And I'm certain the reason they think that is because there were more restrictions and more very municipality and community-friendly provisions put into this law than in any other state. And I'm sure it's exactly what Verizon was looking to avoid. And recently, Telecommunity, an alliance of local governments promoting their role in cable TV franchising, says that they have evidence that shows these new laws, 21 of them across the country, have not accelerated the deployment of broadband services or lowered prices, which is the two big promises that were given by the big telephone companies. The alliance notes that in states where AT&T is the primary provider, the company still has failed to launch its internet-based TV service in half of the states where statewide franchising has been implemented. So there are the promises, but then there is the execution, and it should be interesting. And I recently just read an article online in the Capital Times, which is a newspaper in Madison, Wisconsin, complaining that in the debates over a possible statewide franchising bill in that state, that the debates have not been nearly so inclusive, and especially not including public access television advocates and municipalities, whereas these players were included in the debates down here in Illinois. But it seems to have been a very unusual thing, although the general trend is that it seems as though as these laws get implemented, they are becoming more and more municipality-friendly, even if it's not exactly what municipalities or public access cable advocates would want. They seem to be better than the first laws that were passed in states like Texas and Florida. So you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reismandel. I'm your host. I'm taking a look at some fairly important news stories to come through in the last few weeks. We haven't done a lot of news recently. Of course, not a lot goes on at the national level during these summer months, and not a lot goes on at the state level necessarily, but a few things do come through, and I like to cover it. And sometimes doing kind of a sweep up after a few weeks of interviews and things like that allows me to cover it a little bit less than like the he said, she said, or like the ball game or a horse race, but a little bit more in depth over the course of a half an hour. It's one of the things we occasionally do here on the show. And of course, the Media Geek website is MediaGeek.net with the blog updating on all sorts of things that can't fit onto the show. And the radio show is at radio.mediageek.net. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can just download an MP3 or Ogg Vorbis, however you like to get onto your computer or MP3 player, whether you want to hear it again or you that's the way you want to listen. All there at MediaGeek.net. If you want to send me some feedback, any comments of the program, send them to paul@mediageek.net. Especially, I'm interested in hearing, I mentioned this a week or two ago, about any projects, especially independent media projects, be it publishing, be it radio, or anything else in that kind of area that you know about that you think would deserve some coverage here in Media Geek. Because I don't want to just talk about big players and stars who are, you know, within the alternative media world, the grassroots world. And I don't just want to talk about what goes on legislatively or what goes on at the FCC. I think it's very interesting and very important to talk to people who are out there really trying to make the most of these tools, whether internet tools, video, whether it's different types of art, whether it's printing, whether it's different types of technology, to actually communicate and do things that are very hard to do via the mainstream media system, through mainstream publishing, through mainstream music avenues, through the mainstream record labels. These are things that I think are very, it's good to see these examples and good to hear about them, not only because then you can go and look for them, because I think it serves as great examples and great inspiration for each of us to take advantage of great independent and alternative media tools. And so with all the consolidation that has happened over the last 20 years, we've been very lucky. And I do think it is luck, in some regards, to also have had technologies that come together that allow us to continue to communicate and circumvent it to a large extent. But the continued existence of these technologies and their continual ability for us to be able to take advantage of them and take advantage of them in the ways that are most liberating are not about luck, but are about action. And are about defending them and about also working on things like policy, working on things like laws to make sure they continue to be available. So one front that is definitely heating up is wireless spectrum. In 2009, here in the United States, we're moving from analog TV to digital TV. And digital TV, of course, allows for high-definition TV, so-called HDTV. But what that also means is that the analog channels that many of us are still watching now will no longer exist. Those transmitters will be turned off. And it also means that huge swaths of spectrum of the wireless ether that these signals come over will suddenly be free and free for new uses. Now, Congress and the FCC are looking forward to a windfall because these will not be given away, but auctioned off. The FCC is still working on the rules for how these will be auctioned. And we're really getting into a new version of how, too. And this is what's so interesting about this moment in time. Because for the longest time, really from before the foundation of the FCC, going back to before the foundation of the Federal Radio Commission, going back to the earlier part of the 20th century, the particular slice of spectrum, which we usually hear of in hertz or gigahertz, as in 90.1 megahertz or as 2.4 gigahertz, they were very much allocated to particular uses, to radio, to telegraph, or to television, to cellular phone, to wireless communications, to unlicensed use for like things like your wireless internet or for a cordless phone. And we're getting into a stage in a world in which with digital technology, we no longer have to allocate spectrum for particular uses. In fact, many different devices of many different kind can share a piece of the spectrum, like 2.4 gigahertz, where you can have things like cordless phones working at the same time as internet. And if designed that way from the very beginning, they can share this spectrum without interfering with one another. So this is what we can be looking forward to rather than having a particular piece of spectrum and say this could only be used for digital television, only could be used for certain uses. They may be able to be used for lots of different things. And of course, what has a lot of people excited about is the idea of creating more spectrum for use for internet, for wireless networks, and perhaps in an unlicensed fashion. We've seen all the innovation that went along with wireless internet, and most of that happened because there was no licensing requirement, to the extent to which now many of us, especially in urban areas, take wireless internet for granted to go to the cafe and there just simply is internet there to use your laptop or your portable device, or go to a friend's house and bring your laptop over and getting right on the internet in ways that we barely even thought of 10 years ago, all because there was a piece of spectrum that was able to be used without a license and without having to be approval for the particular type of device that works there. This could happen with some of the spectrum that gets released with the analog TV channels going away. And one piece of that is 700 megahertz, which is a particularly valuable piece of spectrum because it easily passes through things like concrete walls and obstacles. Inside your own house, you may sometimes see, or your apartment, that you don't get wireless internet signals so well in some parts because of the build of your house or by location. Things like brick or concrete or cinder block make it kind of difficult. And that's because of this spectrum, the piece of the frequency that it operates on, doesn't penetrate these substances very well. And so here's a piece of spectrum that could be great for wireless internet if it gets allocated as such or opened up to be used for such. And that might happen. On July 11th, the House Internet Subcommittee had a hearing and had a visit from FCC Chairman Kevin Martin about how these wireless spectrum auctions might go down. And what Chairman Martin said, he himself is a Republican, was actually welcomed by the Democratic leadership, including Chairman Ed Markey, because Chairman Martin was talking about recommending that some winning spectrum licensees allow unaffiliated devices and software applications to operate on their networks. And so what does that mean? Well, they were criticizing, particularly Chairman Markey, the new iPhone, which it's hard to have not heard about, but it's tied exclusively to AT&T. That device might be really capable of super high-speed internet access, except that the AT&T network is not capable of super high-speed internet access. And so, because you can only have AT&T with the iPhone, your little device is very much crippled. And so there's some consumer-friendly requirements that the FCC is thinking of putting in there that may say that if particular companies win the ability to use particular pieces of spectrum, they would have to allow other devices, other pieces of software, something that you might develop yourself if you're a software engineer, to operate in our networks and not make it a completely closed network. Also, there's the opportunity that maybe certain pieces of the spectrum could be opened up for non-auctioned use to be unlicensed. And this is all happening right now with the FCC. In fact, they are taking comments about this. And you can go comment more at fcc.gov. Also go to freepress.net and savetheinternet.com are two websites with a lot more information about the possible future of wireless devices and the internet. Finally, one last note I wanted to make is I've had an opportunity to use a new media player. It's actually a new version of an old media player. You may have heard of the Real Player, which has been around for well over 10 years as a particular software application that can play internet media. Normally, it's not a thing I would talk about on the program because I'm not really about giving free publicity. But the interesting new Real Player 11 beta is something of interest to me because it records. And I've given it a shot. I've used it multiple times. I've actually used it a couple of times to bring you some audio from hearings, in particular the House subcommittee, the House Committee on Small Business hearing on internet radio rates. I recorded that using Real Player and extracted the audio much more easily than I could have using various tools that have been out there for extracting this. It's all about fair use rights, we're told, about our ability to record and use the media out there in a fair fashion. Not to pirate in that particular case. I was doing it for education. It was a signal which was not otherwise copyrighted because it was run by a it was actually won by the House and by C-SPAN. But it was nevertheless very nice to be able to do that very easily. And I think it's worth pointing out because there have been various little software applications for the last few years that will do this. It will record videos for you. They don't all work. They don't always work well. They don't work with all different media types. And in this particular case, that new Real Player actually does work with most things that you can play, although it does respect, it says, copyrights. I've definitely, if their particular piece of media, I'm not sure exactly how it flags the player that it can't be recorded, but it did actually work in some cases. I couldn't record some things, but I was able to record plenty of things, especially YouTube videos. That showed no problem. And what also it brings to you is that your ability to record things really easily, at least on, it's only for Windows at the moment, but when you see a video, a little, if you enable it to, a little box pops up that says download this video. And it does work. It doesn't necessarily transcode it, meaning it doesn't necessarily turn things into an MP3. It doesn't necessarily turn things into some other video format or audio format. But it does work. And it's an interesting thing to see. We'll see whether or not they get sued out of existence for this. You know, and this is not an advertisement for Real Player. I just want to point out because I think this is a good thing. And I really wish more media players, I wish Windows and QuickTime and Flash Player all did this, so that we could choose how to use the media that's out there. Because most of us really aren't there to pirate. We just want to use it. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.